Hello and welcome to episode number 15 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Coming up on Light the Eye, some of the news of the day and our special guest. He knows perhaps even more than you do, Robert, about U of I athletics.
86 times more than I do.
Well, he's lived like 86 times longer than you have. It's yes. Lauren Tate from the News Gazette, WDWS Radio. I'm proud to have partnered with him for several years now on the radio. And, of course, many of you have read him or have listened to him. He even had time on television here in Central Illinois. But he's the dean of Illinois journalists when it comes to Illini athletics.
I feel like he's the dean of Big Ten journalists. Like, I don't think there's another him anywhere.
So we're looking forward to a conversation with Lauren. We'll go down memory lane a little bit, but don't worry. We'll also be in the present as well. Looking forward to it. If you haven't yet, would you do us a favor and take a moment to like or subscribe to Light the Eye? We really appreciate you listening, you watching, you commenting, you sending us feedback or questions. We get to listener and viewer questions from time to time. You can always email us, lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. That's lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. Before we get it going, what do we do, Robert?
I think we need to light the eye.
We're in the Center for Innovation and in Teaching and Learning, CITL, here in the Armory. You know what else is going on right now, Robert?
There's a track meet. I just went back to the back room over here, and you could hear the announcer announcing what the next heat was. So, yes, athletics are rolling.
I want to remind you that at the track meet, there's a long jump. What do you call it, a pit?
You know, we haven't asked Ella about this yet, have we?
No,
because we've only had Maisie producing the episodes where we talked about it. So I'm gonna, Ella, if you haven't seen those episodes, what I have committed to do is we were talking about who was it? Olivia Howell had jumped 22 feet 10 inches, something like that.
Yeah, Olivia Howell's a long distance runner.
Yep, I'm gonna start that over.
Sophia Beckman, mm-hmm. I believe. Is it Beckman? Beckwith? We better start this whole segment again.
No, I'll just start with the, you know, we have, and I'll go to Ella. We're okay with the intro.
She didn't know you're going to come to her anyway.
She's ready. I see her with the mic.
Make sure you're, Beckman. Beckman. Not Beckman, but Beckman.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, we didn't, I don't think we've had this conversation with Ella, because it's only been Maisie who was producing the episodes when
Ella,
we talked about
Ella,
it.
Ella, yes. Peterson is here.
Yes. Have you heard that one before, Ella? Yes. So I have committed to, basically, I have committed to try a long jump. We were talking to the track coach about Sophia Beckman and her, you know, she has
more than 22 feet.
Yes, 22 feet, 10 inches or whatever, longest jump in the world in the last several months, all of this. And I said, I think I could get 10 feet. And so
you didn't say this to Petros, though.
I just said it to you. Right. I just said, I think I could.
On this pod.
Right. I said, I think
while
I could
we were
jump
recording
10 feet into a pit of sand. And, you know, Maisie ran track in high school and went to state in long jump and triple jump, and so we talked to her about it. She said her PR was 17 feet something, and I said I could get 10. Ella, do you think I could get 10 feet? Going out there right now, running start, the whole jump off one foot for some reason has thrown me off. For some reason, I thought you would kind of get a little help from the other foot. But jumping
not
off,
the 53 years old, yes, and out, yes, of shape?
Yes, not, none of that.
That's not
just
throwing
the
you off?
The one foot. Do you think I could get 10 feet?
Okay. I have some faith in you getting 10 feet.
Yes.
I think there's definitely a shot. I know Maisie was long jump in high school. I went to state for distance, so I was a 4x8.
Okay, okay.
So my experience with any type of jumping is so incredibly low.
Okay.
So I think the odds, I think we could go toe for toe.
Okay.
With who's going further.
I think Maisie gets to coach me, right? Didn't we agree to that? She gets to give me pointers as to what to do. Like, I'm worried about getting close to the board. I mean, let's be honest. We're not going to find anybody who's going to allow us to do this legally without signing some kind of waiver. So we're probably going to like go to like Rantoul High School and just jump onto the track and try it.
Well, it's a balmy day here in East Central Illinois.
Yes.
At 0 degrees or whatever it is.
Yes. Maisie's answer was, I would love to see you jump 10 feet. She took the politician answer.
No, it was even better. She said, I would love for you to jump 10 feet.
Yes.
I would love for you to accomplish that.
Yes. Which I think
I interpret her to be saying what I said. No shot.
Did you ever try it, Ella? Like, have you ever attempted like long jump, or you were just always sprints and distance?
I was never sprints. I played soccer, so that's where I got the sprints in.
Got it.
But distance, I stayed so far away from anything jumping.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna see what
I
can do. It's
10
feet. Okay. It's 10 feet. Me to that wall behind you is about 10 feet. I could jump from here. Running start, I could jump that. I think I'm going to do it.
Well, the whole point is that you need to follow through on this
declaration
that you made.
It's supposed to snow a whole bunch this weekend. Let's let it get a little warmer and a little less snow.
I don't know. There's a long jump pit right over there. We may, right after we tape this, may have an opportunity. We'll see.
We'll see.
And the whole, also, Ella, just for accountability's sake, $77.
Yes.
Because I don't think he can clear 10 feet. If I'm wrong, I will donate $77 to a charity of Robert's choice. If he does not clear 10 feet, he will donate $77 to a charity of my choice.
And a friend of mine said he will double that. And there's a couple other people on Illini board that have pledged money toward the pot. So it will be growing beyond.
Is the pot based on who wins?
No, the pot is based on here's the money, and it either goes to your charity of choice or my charity of choice.
So they're not pulling for anybody.
No, no. Well, they're pulling for me.
You're going to be pulling your own muscles.
Yes.
So
yes.
They don't need to pull for you.
Yes. It's. I think it's something that can be done. The landing, the try to not fall backwards and lose distance after the landing, that's all scared me a lot. But I remain confident.
Okay.
And you got to understand how much. I took Christmas lights down outside yesterday. Yes, the Christmas lights were still up into late January. I took them down outside because it's going to be so cold and it's going to snow, and then and they would be up till February, and you don't want to be that guy. So out there, I'm like looking at like this planting bed we put in that I know we measured out was about 10 feet away from the sidewalk and this kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, so that's 10 feet. I think I could do that. So I think about this a fair bit of, you know, 10 feet is a doable distance. 12, no way, but 10, I think it's possible.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm
just
glad
psyching
you're
myself up.
Mm-hmm. Glad you're optimistic.
We should probably talk about something other than my thoughts that I have, my delusions of grandeur here.
Okay, how about Illinois men's basketball beating Maryland on Wednesday night?
I could talk about
without
that.
Without Kylan Boswell, 89-70, which is a 19-point spread, right?
Yep, yep.
Are you okay with that?
It was. I mean, we're going to talk about this, right? The of that whole thing where that I talk about, it's the single worst example of two scores that have an 8 and a 7. You know, if Illinois scored one more point and had 90, if Maryland scored one less point and had 69, then the score of 90-69 looks completely different than 89-70.
But more importantly, Andrei Stojakovic had a heck of a ball game.
No, I think what's more important is this is they banked in a three at the buzzer to make it 89-70 and ruin my ability to enjoy the final score because it was cut to 19.
You know why I didn't like that, the bank three at the end, was simply because Illinois had gone on the entire winning streak, not allowing a team at 70 or more.
And they got exactly to 70.
So now you can say they've held in an 8-game winning streak, they've held opponents to 70 points or fewer.
And they only got the ball back because of that over and back call, which Underwood was quite angry about. So, you know, it was a comical ending to a game that was well in hand. Look, when the starters came out, I often will just make a screen capture on my laptop of what the box score looks like when the walk-ons went in. And it was, 86-59 at the time. Illinois dominated this game. 89-70 makes it sound a little closer, but it was domination.
Yeah, and not a surprise. I mean, there was a question of, okay, can the machine still function very well without Kylan Boswell playing? And the answer was yes.
Yep.
Against Maryland. The task against Purdue, depending on when you're listening to this, we're taping this the day before the Purdue game, but that's going to be a whole different animal. But they were able to pass the test. But be it said, Maryland is just not what Maryland's been in the past with a new head coach and a whole new roster. They'll get back there. They've got a really good recruiting class coming in, but this is a down year. And this, we've talked about this too, just strikes me as the bottom of the Big Ten. This year in the Big Ten seems to be a little bit lower than usual. That's not to say that somebody can't nip you there on the heels, but the top of the Big Ten is really good. The middle is still a good, solid middle. It's just the bottom, and Maryland's in that. And I think the floor of Illinois is just too high to have a problem with Maryland even missing one of your key players.
Yeah, I mean, you're going from the team that's, you know, in net something like 153, and now you're going to a top five team on the road. So things are going to change a whole bunch tomorrow, and we shall see.
Yeah, it'd be great if Illinois would get away to find a way to win in Mackey, but it's hard to do. Many have tried. All right, the other news to share with you all, and I'm going to bring up a name that I posit that maybe a good majority of average Illini fans, I don't mean average in quality, I just mean
I know what you're
typical, the Illini typical Illini fan, cannot name anybody in athletic administration except for Josh Whitman as the athletic director. He's the public face. But his right-hand guy, the number two guy, Roger Denny, was just announced as the new athletic director for Oklahoma University. University of Oklahoma?
OU.
OU. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma yeah, for University. OU. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to Roger Denny.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically the deputy AD at Illinois. And again, most fans don't know the breakdown of administration and who does what. And I understand that, but you know, that's a pretty vital role and does a lot behind the scenes, particularly as the sport administrator for football. So congratulations. He's jumping to an SEC program.
Yep. I could talk about this for a long time. I'll try not to, because we want to get to our guest, but I could talk about this for a very, very long time. Look, he will be replacing Joe Castiglione, who was the Oklahoma athletic director for 26 years, hired in 1998, I think. They hired him away from Missouri. He's the one who went out and found Bob Stoops and rebuilt Oklahoma football and got them a national title in 2002 or whenever they won, and was basically a top five AD in all of college sports. You know, Oklahoma built a dynasty in softball and other sports, and they're often up near the top in the Director's Cup and all that kind of stuff. And take a category from different kinds of revenue and everything else, Oklahoma's always up there at the top. So he did a phenomenal job. It's very, very, very striking to me that when Oklahoma was looking for an athletic director the last time, they just went and overpaid for Missouri's AD. They said, hey, come here, we'll pay you a lot more than Missouri's paying you, and he left. This time, they hired the number two guy at Illinois. And I don't think I could even find the words to say how massive that is. I made the point on Twitter earlier, and I stand by this, that the best comparison I can do for this is when football programs are out looking for a coach and they want to get somebody from someone's system, so they just hire one of the assistants from that program. I use the example of Nick Saban. People jumped on me on Twitter of like, oh my gosh, you're saying that I'm saying that Josh Whitman is a top five athletic director to the point where Oklahoma, a top 10 program in terms of athletic revenue and everything else, has said we need that recipe that they've got at Illinois. Roger Denny was a lawyer in St. Louis. Whitman personally recruited him. His first job in athletics administration was here at Illinois, starting in 2021. Oklahoma's hiring an athletic director that has 4.5 years experience in college athletics. So, I mean, I don't want to talk like qualifications here, but they're not hiring somebody because he has this long track record or because he built up Wichita State and is ready for a bigger job, or even that he's been, you know, we've seen Texas A&M and Ohio State just going out and overpaying for athletic directors of like, well, who's the top guy? Let's just go overpay for the top guy or woman. It's been like this for a long time that's what the big programs do. And it is striking that, look, Missouri lost their athletic director because they couldn't afford to pay what Illinois can pay, or I'm sorry, what Oklahoma could pay in 1998. Not only is Josh Whitman untouchable in Champaign, but I imagine this was a call to Whitman to see if he was interested, and him saying, nope, I'm good with my alma mater, but my number two guy is pretty bright, and he's done a lot to advance some things in the 4 years he's been here. And they interviewed him, and he got the job. This whole idea of just hiring the number two guy at Illinois, and again, he's being hired, nothing against him, he's been big. I will talk about him in a moment. But he's hired based on what Whitman has done and what the national reputation of the turnaround of this athletic department. I have some of the stats that I pulled up as far as research. Illinois, when Whitman took over, the athletic budget was about $85 million. Whitman told us in June that 2025 would reach, you know, they're looking at the school year of like 2024 and 2025. So by July 1, they would probably reach $190 million, and they would be over $200 million this year, this school year. That's the biggest advancement in the Big Ten as far as athletic budgets. I even have the stats. The conference median growth over that time is like 64%. Illinois' athletic department budget growth is 102% over the last 10 years. Illinois went from, 2015, 2016, 2017 being like the 40th largest athletic department. This year, my guess is somewhere between 12th and 15th. I've written articles where I've compared it to Oklahoma, of what their budget was, how far Illinois was behind Oklahoma before, and how close Illinois is to Oklahoma now, just in revenue brought in from this and ticket sales and merchandise and the growth of everything that we've seen. And so for that to happen, like, that's the Sabaning for athletic departments, right? Like, everybody wanted to hire a Saban assistant because it's like, whatever they're doing, we need that. Whatever they're doing, we need to win football games that way. Go hire his offensive line coach to be our head coach. Let's just do that. That's we just need him, what he's learned there, and him to bring it here. This is Oklahoma doing that, right? This is Oklahoma seeing the growth of the Illini athletic department and saying, hey, the number two guy. Because he's not being hired on some, I'm sure he's a good interview. Again, I'll talk about that in a second, but he's not being hired based on some long track record where he's been building and building and now it's his next step in his career. He was a lawyer for a long time and then he has 4 years under Whitman, the last 4 years, the last two as his deputy athletic director. When he was hired, he was the COO here. And that's advancing him to take over a top 10 athletic department. So it's insane the growth from what Illinois has done and how other programs want to hire that because they want Whitman's recipe of what he's done to build an athletic department. It's crazy.
It's also very interesting to me that he is going to an SEC program. And in this time where the Big Ten and the SEC have some public debate and times when they're in line lockstep with each other and times when they're not,
yep.
It's particularly around college football. I don't want to presume that Roger Denny thinks exactly like Josh Whitman. He's his own guy, and he will have his own needs and priorities as the athletic director in a new space. But you assume there's some athletic director DNA in yes. there. And Whitman even said he looked forward to working with him on the future of college athletics. So just that bridge that exists there now between a Big Ten and an SEC program in that way.
Yeah,
probably bodes well.
Absolutely.
When the power brokers sit down to figure out the future of certain things.
Yes.
And so I just note that as I would see as a positive. Also, it should say Roger Denny was a finalist at Missouri State for their athletic director job. I believe that was last year, maybe that was 2 years ago. But his time has been coming now for a little bit. So congratulations to him.
And shout out to whoever got the Missouri State job over him, because the guy you beat out for that job just got the Oklahoma job.
This is Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union.
And I just lit it up. Sorry. Keep going.
This is definitely the most giddy any podcast ever been about a deputy AD.
It just speaks to who we're becoming. It's incredible. And I feel like it's one of those things, like I want people to understand how massive this is. The biggest news story of the year so far. And I want people to understand that.
In case the winning and the teams and all that.
Yes, in case the
give you a clue.
19 football wins in two seasons. In case the basketball team that's ranked, the women's basketball team that was just ranked. In case any of that and all of that didn't tell you. The financial side, the organizational side, it is all there.
All right, a man who has seen a lot of Illinois successes and a lot of the failures as well for Illinois athletics through many decades is Loren Thain. He's our guest on the program. A little bit of a walk down memory lane and a look at what's going on right now with the Dean of Illinois Sports Reporting, Loren Thain. He's our guest on Light the Eye right after this. Our guest on the program today is Loren Thain. He has been a columnist, writer, and broadcaster with the News Gazette and WDWS Radio in Champaign since 1966, covering Illinois, his alma mater. And I can't say this emphatically enough. It is a privilege to have you here on Light the Eye. Welcome aboard, my friend.
Happy to be here. I can't imagine what I can give you that I haven't given you in the past.
Oh, we'll find something.
Well, welcome
back.
Well,
those are the things I don't want you to find.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry. I have a way of getting it out of you.
Well, welcome to the Armory, first of all. I was describing to you where we were, and you started to tell me, listen, son, I've been in the Armory a time or two.
Oh, I'll say. We used to actually have... lockers across to the Armory under Huff, and then we walked through underground path into the Armory, and we had baseball practice here and other things. They had set up screens and everything. When I was in school, they had, I'm saying, baseball practice in January and February.
Yep. Wow.
Not everybody knows this, but you did wear the jersey. So fill us in on your Illinois history. You grew up around here in Monticello, but then went here and played.
Well, I didn't play. That was the problem. I mean, I wasn't good enough. I was on the squad. I was on the freshman squad. As a matter, I was on the first freshman squad on a team that had Joe Hallbeck of Hallbeck Homes was our shortstop. I was third base and had Johnny Davis at first and a buddy of mine by the name of Long at first base. And so we actually played varsity. We played the varsity in games, and everybody played games all that season. We were all ineligible as freshmen.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was on that baseball team, and I didn't make it my sophomore year. My junior year, I thought I had a real chance. I'd moved to shortstop, and he hired you hire him these days. You actually recruited a guy from St. Louis from his own hometown, Lee Albrock did, by the name of Vince Fegenbutz. And Vince was a little bit bigger, had a little better arm, he's a little better hitter, and could run a little faster. And somehow he beat me out for this shortstop position.
Just by running, fielding, and hitting better?
That's all. That's all I could do better.
It doesn't seem fair.
How was the armory used? So you were a student from, what, 49 to 53? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
How was the armory used then?
Well, they put up screens in there, and of course they didn't prevent people from running on the outside.
Yep.
On the track.
Sure.
But the quarter mile track was still there, and they practiced track all the time. But inside, screens were everywhere.
Yeah.
We could pitch and we could hit. We could take infield.
Sure.
But we had room to do that. But the outfielders were not used that way at all.
Was it still like, you know, ROTC based of, like, you know, the history of the building was an actual, you know, at the land grant schools, they built these armories that were going back to war times and such. Were there still functions of it like that back then?
I was in ROTC taking classes here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When I went into service, I went into 2 years of service from the ROTC here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
ROTC is still here in the armory.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, and to make a long story short, I mean, I went out for the basketball team, didn't make that team either.
That would have been, let's see, I mean, well, that's almost Whiz Kids, right? I guess it's
no, it's after Whiz Kids. Okay. The team that I was on, as when I was a sophomore and when I was a junior,
uh-huh,
we went to the Final Four both years with mostly a team in my class. Bredar, Bemoris, Falmer, Peterson, uh-huh, Baumgartner. We had all those guys were on the team, and when they were sophomores, they had Don Sunderlich and Ted Beach were the seniors on that team, and Rod Fletcher was the only junior that played much.
Uh-huh.
So they had the nucleus of that team for 3 years was the sophomores, sophomore, junior, senior in my class. We had terrific players.
Yeah,
and we won, we get to the Final Four, won the Big Ten. The only way you could get into the NCAA was to win the Big Ten. We won the Big Ten the first 2 years. The third year, we didn't win the Big Ten. Indiana won the Big Ten and the NCAA. We got beat out by Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
But Harry Combs had great teams in that era, just tremendous. He went to the Final Four in 49, 51, and 52.
Yep. And all games were at Huff.
Mm-hmm.
The tunnel. Is that the old steam tunnels or where, what tunnel was between the armory and Huff?
Oh, I don't know. It's just a tunnel that that everybody went through. I don't know.
I wonder if it still exists today.
I think it does.
Okay. I'm going to go searching for it at some point.
But when you were running around here at the Army, did you ever stop and think, one day I'm going to be in this building recording a podcast with two yahoos?
Podcast didn't exist until he was in his 70s. So
I just want to mention, you're 94 and sharp as a tack. And where are you headed after this program?
Well, I'm going to my daughter's birthday party down at the Ferrens. She's 70 today.
Your daughter is turning 70.
Well, she's the middle daughter, yeah.
Yes.
Melinda's 70, will be 72.
She probably doesn't want us to know that. But you
winced when he said sharp as a tack. You just named every player on the 1951 Illini basketball team.
Well, don't ask me every player on the 1961 team because I can't do it.
That's because you were in Hammond. If you were here, you'd be able to do
No. I lived with those guys. I knew those guys. I played with those guys. I mean, they were all my friends. They were buddies. I mean, I took Bob Peterson, our center, over to Monticello one time, and he walked into my grandmother's house, and she looked up. He filled the whole door. He was so big, she'd never seen anybody that big before in her life.
Now, you also, didn't you live with Chuck Borio on the football team?
Didn't live with him. I lived with Sunderlich, but I played a lot of poker with Chuck Borio. He was in our poker group.
Were you a good poker player?
Well, sometimes, when I had good cards.
That's like coaches, right? When they have good players, they're good coaches?
I don't know. I made a little money. I kept a record on it, but I didn't like to lose. I didn't like to lose my money, so I'm a little bit cheaper than most.
And what a time to be here, because that's, I mean, three Final Fours in 4 years, mm-hmm, right? And then in 51 is the last claimed national title for Illinois football. You know, there were like four that lay claim to it that year, but one of the, you know, polls or whatever.
Yeah, I went to the Rose Bowl that year.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, just what a time for Illinois sports, mm-hmm. right?
Well, we won wrestling, we won track, we won a whole bunch of sports.
Yeah.
At that time, we were just the dominant team in the Big Ten in all sports.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I think we might have had, you count indoor and outdoor track and everything, I think we're pretty close to 8 championships in 1 year.
Wow.
1 school year.
Wow.
Is that possible?
I guess. I mean, it's hard to do now.
Well, you got 18 teams in there now. That's a little different.
Was fencing around back then? When was
We won the fencing.
Yeah, because they were like 15 of 18 Big Ten titles or whatever.
Oh, so, yeah.
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 Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
I've said this to you before. I want to say it again. About 10 years ago or so, I had the opportunity to step in as a regular host on the radio at WDWS with you. Mm-hmm. And I was a little intimidated, I guess, by the moment.
I'm not scary at all.
No, I guess not. But you could have made it scary, and you didn't. You had a large reputation, and I just appreciate how the way that you just welcomed me into the fold.
The only thing that I have done that's really outstanding is I've lived longer than most of the people that I grew up with. That's the only thing. There are guys that are writing for the News Gazette now that can write rings around me and talk rings around me. There are just a lot of guys that do everything better, but I stuck around longer, that's all.
Okay. But I always will remember this. I asked you one time, and I want to see if you still stand by it. Thousands of hours you've spent on the radio, not only doing shows, but broadcasting games as well. But, of course, the many, many inches and words you typed. When I say, what's your career? Do you say I'm a writer, or do you say I'm a broadcaster?
Oh, I'm a writer.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. Ultimate. I mean, you were also on television. Yeah. Over in Decatur on WAND, you're the ultimate multimedia guy before it was cool.
You know what I did that nobody knows? I was the first person to ever do a coach's show. There was no such thing. Mm. Ray Elliott never did coach's show. Pete Elliott didn't do a coach's show. Harry Combs wouldn't do a coach's show. But Harry quit coaching after the first year I was here. I ran into a slush fund and Harry got fired. And I became real good friends with Harv Schmidt, our basketball coach, and I talked him into doing a half-hour show on Channel 15. And we did that show and I paid him, whatever it was. And the next year, Channel 3 offered him like 3 times as much money, and I found out what a friend was.
That's great.
Well... I know you want to talk about present time as well, but I just wanted to say thanks. And you've had a long career. And the thing you've always said is, I haven't worked a day in my life.
Well, I know I haven't. And I really haven't worked. I mean, I spent hours today reading and trying to get some information that I might write about. And I spend most of my time I'm working, if you consider reading about sports, because that's what I do, or watching sports. Mm-hmm. But it's something I do anyway, so I might as well get paid for it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like that you say you identify as a writer because, I'm 53, so I'm growing up in the 80s, and, you're the columnist here in Champaign, but you're syndicated at the time. So mm-hmm. talk about how, again, everybody wanted to know what Lauren Tate said about the game. That's how it worked back then. And
I decided one summer, mm-hmm. I started making trips around. You can't sell yourself without being there personally, I felt. So I drove down to the St. Louis area and got a paper down there, and then I got Charleston to come on, and then I went up north and got some paper. I had about 12 papers at one time, mm-hmm. but I never followed up on it. I mean, and I wasn't getting paid much, at like $10 a column or something mm-hmm. like that. So, but it was a nice little income. I was two a week in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I made some money, but I had to keep track of it for taxes. But, I just didn't follow up. And as time went by, this one drop off, that one drop off. They get new management. This got sports editor be different. And then, by the way, newspapers started falling off too.
Sure.
So the next thing I know, right now I don't have any other than I have really one, but I I don't take anything for it. I just give it to them free.
Sure, sure. I mean, when faxes came along, there was tate lines. Like, mm-hmm. people would, you, I mean, I did it when, like, I got my first job. I was like, how long did that go? Like, when it was just like, hey, let's get, you could get a fax of your column sent to your fax machine.
I don't know, because I didn't do it.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly. And the time has just gone by. And,
yeah, I get it.
But
the thing that
everybody misses on me is that, and I've probably told both of you this, but I was just a jock when I got here from Hammond. I mean, I'd been pitching baseball for 10 years on 3 state championship teams. I was a good pitcher at the end of things. Not in the beginning, but by the time I was 29 or 30, I was a pretty good pitcher. And as I say, Lansing, Illinois won 3 titles in the Elgin State Tournament, which is a 16-team tournament that sends the best team to Wichita, sends the winner to Wichita. And so I was pitching in Wichita, drove back to Champaign and wrote my final column for Hammond and wrote my first column for Champaign. Mm. On the same day, on the same Sunday.
Wow.
And when I say that, the reason I'm pointing that out is that when the slush fund hit, I had to change my entire approach to writing, because I was just an Illinois jock mm-hmm. up to that time. And after that, I couldn't be, because you got people committing infractions you have to write about, you have to understand that you can't be a cheerleader and be a writer for the, and so it got me in a lot of trouble over time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that a lot of people have forgotten that, but, you know, I was known as that dang Tate, and with the mm-hmm. other word for dang, for many years by a particular group of people in the athletic department. Most of whom are all gone now.
Okay, you brought up slush fund, and that's one thing I wanted to talk about today. I think a lot of Illini fans know what the reference is, but for those who don't, walk us through it. It was,
well, I'm going to walk you right from the beginning, because it all started in Danville at a golf outing, and we had all of the Illini donors and fans and people were over there. And they decided Pete felt like he needed some money for some players, and so they kind of got the thing rolling a little bit. People, my uncle and Hoopson contributed to it. He didn't even know what he was contributing. I said, "You're part of the slush fund, you know." But anyway, this was back when right before Butkus, mm-hmm. so this would have been in the early '60s mm-hmm. when I think it originated, mm-hmm. and then it grew, and so there were 3 funds. The athletic director had a fund, the basketball coach had a fund, the football coach had a fund. They're all in the neighborhood, and I can't get this right, but it was in the teens or $20,000, like mm-hmm. $20,000 in a fund, per fund. I don't think it was that total for all the funds. I think they each had a fund, and I think they were, but I don't know the amounts now. It's too long gone. I knew maybe at one time. Mm-hmm. But Doug Mills had a fund, and so Doug decided to retire. And actually, he was being pushed a little bit. He had a problem out at the airport, and so the guy that was succeeding him, the guy that was the assistant athletic director, thought that he was going to be the new athletic director when Doug retired.
Mm-hmm.
And when Doug stepped down, the board met, and they decided that Pete, who was the football coach, Pete Elliott, would be the new athletic director, which infuriated the assistant athletic director, whose name I'm forgetting again. But he took the books of the slush fund to the president, put them on his desk, and said, "I'm not going to have a Michigan man as the athletic director at the University of Illinois," mm. Pete Elliott being a Michigan man.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it should be his job, and so the president had to release that information, so he just turned it over to the Big Ten, and the next thing you know, that's the slush fund. That's why head coaches and assistant coach, Howie Braun, the assistant basketball coach, was fired, Harry was fired, and the football staff.
Yep.
So you didn't break the story?
I didn't break the story. The story was broken by the president.
And so then it moves to... Everyone is replaced. And there were sanctions at the time, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
There were sanctions.
Huge recruiting sanctions, everything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah.
So starting in 66, everything fell apart. Like, fell apart.
Yeah,
and honestly, probably didn't resurrect until the 80s in that sense of, like, Illinois athletics getting back to, you know, I've always looked at it as the lost decade of the 70s, sources back to 66, 67, when all of that happened. And then it was just a long, slow rebuild.
Yeah, Harv was never able to get the basketball thing going, although he did win 20 games that one year with Hout and Miller and that team. And,
mm-hmm.
But you're right. Football really, the attitude at the time, very strong attitude, was we've got to have an Illinois man as the head football coach. There were about two available in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Studwell was busy at that time. I know they would have loved to have him. He was a great player for Ray Elliott. But they wound up hiring Jim Valick, and Valick just couldn't get it going. We mm-hmm. went to Blackman, and that didn't work out. And, you know, you're right. It was just, we just stumbled along. And some people will say that, you know, it lasted longer than it should have.
Yeah. Yeah, the Gary Moeller hire.
That was a disaster.
Disaster,
yeah.
He won six total games mm-hmm. in 3 years, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And really, basketball kind of got there, but then there was the 1 year Gene Bartow thing
mm-hmm.
Where then he took the job, was here a year, and then left for UCLA. And so that's when Lou came in, and mm-hmm. it took Lou 3, 4, 5 years to really get
oh,
it rolling.
Yeah.
So tell us, I'm just curious about what it was like, what you were writing about at the time.
Well, I was writing about too many losses, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
and
different ways to describe the
yeah,
same game.
And as I said, I was not very popular in that period of time because we weren't performing successfully, and things. I think Cecil Coleman became our athletic director, and he was kind of pinching pennies.
Mm-hmm.
We had a time when we had a qualifier in track, a hurdler, who qualified for the state meet and the NCAA meet, and they didn't let him go because they couldn't afford it. Joe Burden, my son-in-law, qualified for the NCAA track golf championship and wasn't allowed because they couldn't afford it.
Wow.
He's mad to this day.
I'll bet.
And that was the University of Illinois at that time. We didn't have the money, or we didn't have the ability to raise the money or something, or maybe we didn't try hard enough. I don't know, because it's sure different now. We've got all kinds of donors, and
yeah.
donations are not, I guess I get an argument from Josh Whitman on this, but donations are near the problem that they were.
Sure, yeah. When did you notice that things were different? Is it when Stoner took over, or was it you know, because
no.
Mike White and,
well,
and Henson?
Are you
had
talking strictly football?
Yeah, I'm talking all sports.
The
80s became this acceleration of mm-hmm. oh, some baseball wins again, and football obviously selling out games, and basketball,
volleyball became huge in the
yes,
80s.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So when did things
one man?
When did things start to turn? You know, for the athletic department in the 80s.
Well, I think we kind of, first of all, Lou came in and he was doing things right. We could see things were going. From the moment he got Levi Cobb and started to break down the in those days, we were recruiting Chicago hard, like harder than anywhere. We were just trying to get in with Sonny Cox and
yep.
the guys up there. And Lou basically, you know, he got Kewan Garris and others that came along and over the time. And The basketball got to be pretty good even before we won big. We became competitive.
Mm-hmm.
We got the great player out of Bloom, the Bloom had good teams. They had consecutive runner-up teams in the state tournament, and we hadn't been able to break that. And Tony Yates kind of broke that, and we started getting players that we hadn't gotten before. And so the basketball was coming,
yeah,
and football was just harder to do.
Yeah,
it was the big two and a little eight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Ohio State and Michigan just ruled, and sometimes we beat everybody else. There was a year I know that after, let's see, that would have been not Beckman, but the coach from out east. I always want to say Beckman, and it's...
Are you talking Mike White? Where are we?
Way back, when we took the coach from out east, whose name is almost Beckman, and I can't
Blackman.
Pronounce...
Blackman.
Blackman, yes.
Blackman could beat everybody in the Big Ten, but he couldn't beat those two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that didn't mean he's going to win every game, but he was competitive with every other team in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But,
and then Harv never beat Purdue once.
Mm.
We had a mat in front of the door into the locker room,
mm-hmm.
and the mat had the score of the Purdue game that they had lost that first year. And by the time he was done, they had it 12 times on there.
Wow!
He never beat him.
Wow!
Which actually, maybe as an aside. At the time of this is the day before Illinois plays Purdue tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious for both of you, in basketball, who is Illinois' rival? Because I want to posit this.
Can you be a rival if the other team doesn't see you as a rival?
That's the perfect answer.
Exactly.
I mean, who is our rival?
Nobody cares.
In basketball?
Purdue and Indiana hate each other. Nobody really hates us.
Wisconsin,
Iowa, and Minnesota have their own little triangle of hate.
I mean, you can make a case, too, that Illinois and Purdue have been the best two teams in the Big Ten for the last 5 years. I think Michigan State would like to say something about that.
Sure.
But,
mm-hmm. but
my
they,
point is...
All they care about is Indiana, and all Indiana cares about is Purdue.
Yeah. The other thing is I don't sense a whole lot of animosity between the two programs.
No, I don't either. I think
Knight and Henson and...
There was a little animosity when Walters went and... Took a player or two. Love went over to Purdue with him, and that was just between Bielema and
Walters.
Walters. That was just. Yeah. I don't think it grew to anything. I don't think it mounts to anything now. But I don't. I think it was Indiana so long for us.
Yep.
And Indiana and Illinois. There was a time. If you go back to McCracken and Combs, and carried all the way through to Henson and Knight. Indiana was clearly the one.
Yep.
But Indiana something's happened to Indiana basketball. I'm not sure what it is, but I don't feel the same quite as I did about them.
Yeah.
And
I hope those fans have something else to cheer for.
Yeah,
if basketball's not going to win.
Well,
I think they're doing okay.
I'm interested in somebody said that among the greatest turnarounds in football history, and I'm thinking, among? Yeah. There's nobody close.
It's interesting you bring that up because we've talked about this before, but you played baseball here. I mean, you were a baseball player. And in my mind, at least for so long, you're associated more in my head with basketball because of the Flying Illini, because of the championship, the national championship runner-up run, and your relationship with Lou. And then... Football was not good for a whole long period of time post 1990 up until now. But I said I sense that if Lauren could have something, he might want a really good football program more than anything else.
Well, that's hard for me to answer that. I like football better than any other sport, and basketball is losing me for reasons that I can't put my finger on, but. When I sit down, if I sit down to watch a basketball game at night between two Big Ten teams, boy, it's hard for me to watch it.
Mm, interesting.
Yep. I mean, it really is. I don't know the players.
Yep.
And I won't know who they are next year, and I don't know who they were. You know, last year it's different from this year. This year is different than the next year. Now, Illinois is doing the same thing, but I know I'm there every game for them. But you know, other than Purdue, I mean, how many teams – do you know the players before the season starts?
I've had that conversation several times with friends about college basketball, about how our conversations used to be, you would say, oh, remember the Sean Respert Michigan State teams? Remember the Roy Hairston Purdue team? You know, there were always these, like, moments that you would say, well, those were the big dog years at Purdue, and that's why they were so good. Or that was when Mo Peterson and, you know, he was the anchor for Michigan State or this and that. There were always these relations to, like, players were there for several years and they had that group of teams, and it just doesn't exist anymore.
When Gene Vance was the athletic director, and after Gene Vance was the athletic director, he had a home over on Knoll Street in Champaign. And after the season, we would all meet over there, a bunch of us, and Lou would be there, and we would sit down. What do you think we'd talk? Who's going to be on the team next year?
Yeah.
At the end of the season, that's what we'd have, an actual party over there, mm-hmm. and decide, okay, well, I think he'll start. They might have to move him to forward for center. We'd have all this discussion. How do you have that discussion now? Can you tell me who's going to be on our team next year?
Yep.
I can't.
Not at all.
Robert has this discussion with himself every night, for football at least.
That's correct.
Yeah. You have your own party for who's going to be on the team.
I have my own charts, my own graphs. But yeah, it's a totally different era, and I think it's a little easier in football because you didn't – like you would know the names of the quarterback, or you had the running back who had 1,500 yards and that was his team. But football has so many names that it wasn't just like basketball was of like, oh, man, that Ken Norman 1987 Illinois team was so sneaky good, or, you know, you just would identify players with teams and this and that. And I think that's why it's a little easier in the portal era in football. You're kind of learning a bunch of new names every year in football as it is. But in basketball, you just were never doing that.
But I studied the names like you do, and it really shook me when I saw five – rotational or starter defensive lineman up and walk out.
Yep.
That's guys that all had eligibility left.
Had eligibility and would have played a ton of minutes next year.
Oh, yeah, and they're all gone.
Yes.
And out of our first 14 players in the front seven,
mm-hmm.
out of the two deep, we got three players back,
mm-hmm.
none of whom were starters.
Mm-hmm.
Need a bigger slush fund?
Well,
just kidding.
I mean, well, legal slush funds now.
I think it's a legitimate question how good Illinois can be next year in football when we've got to have new players, and the players have to be pretty good, and we don't have maybe one defensive lineman that I would consider a really top catch, and the others are, you know, you get a guy, Sullivan from Washington, who hasn't played for 2 years at all. And, you know, I got another guy that's from Jacksonville State, which scares me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a legitimate question about a lot of teams, not just Illinois. How good is Indiana going to be? Can they really do this again?
Right.
I mean, I think they're going to be awfully good. I don't think they'll go undefeated again.
Yeah.
But I just saw a chart that was put out on Twitter, and I've got to find the source on it. And I think you kind of wrote about this, Robert, recently, too. Bielma has established himself, and this was a chart comparing your talent and your success, your perceived talent, mm-hmm. and your success. And Illinois was put in a category of one of the best of getting the most out of what they have.
Well, I think that's fair. I think they did get a lot out of it, but I don't think... He has had a reputation of keeping the players he needed to keep, and he didn't this year.
Yeah, last year was 18 players returning from the bowl game starters, 18 of 22 returning. This year it's, I guess, with McCollum gone. Did McCollum start? It might be down to 7. It was 8. Might be 7. So it's a totally different thing next year for Illinois football. This is a shift and a change. But I just want to say, like, Lauren, you saying these things, it's just so inspiring to me because that's how my brain thinks, right? And you're 94 years old and still thinking through the same kind of things, making little charts. I can see the little papers on your desk at home of like, hey, I need to chart this out. Of the front seven, two deep,
I've
and this and that.
I've got to throw some of those. I get so many papers at home.
Exactly.
I got to throw some of them away to find what I'm trying
to
find.
But it's just, I mean, look, to me, it's so inspiring because, as you said earlier, what else are you going to do? Like, you've just been doing this. You would be doing this if you weren't writing columns still. You would be doing this. You would wake up. You would drink a cup of coffee. You would think, gosh, how many people are left from the front seven now? And you would go and you would look it up and you'd spend the next 2 hours doing it. And that's the way my brain thinks. And that's what I do every day now. So I just want to let you know, for you to be doing that at 94 years old is so incredibly inspiring to me.
Well, I can't explain the age thing. That's just a happenstance. I mean, nobody understands. I don't understand. Every day, it really hurts because I lose somebody.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, maybe I lose somebody I know. Maybe I just, you know, Snooki Dean's brother just died from Bonasol this week. And, you know, and then I just, every day it's somebody. It might be a national, former national, I mean, maybe it's a Hollywood actor that I saw in a movie 50 years ago. But, you know, it's somebody I kind of know of or know. And it's brutal.
Yeah.
But the great thing for me, I'm the luckiest guy in the world in this sense. Boy, this is dangerous to say, but I've got three daughters and a son, and all the children and all the grandchildren, and we've got everybody's in great shape, all the husbands and all the spouses, and we, our whole family, we had like 25 or 30 of us, I don't know how many anymore, I can't keep track, but we're all in great shape, and I'm in reasonably good shape.
You're in incredible shape. And you played softball until what age? When did you stop playing slow pitch softball?
You know, I forgot. It was in my 80s.
Yeah, I think it was 86. We've talked about this before. Yeah. I think you pitched until you were 86.
No, I didn't pitch. I never pitched in softball.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No,
I combined two stories.
I played wherever they would put me. I showed up 1 year, a few years back, I showed up to play that season. And we had a manager whose name I won't mention, said, I saw I wasn't in the lineup. And I said, okay, I'll coach third. He said, we got three guys in line for that. I said, okay, what am I going to do? So I just went home.
You got recruited over.
I got recruited. You know, they wanted to win. That was, and I had,
can't have this 85-year-old guy anymore.
No, I wasn't a winner anymore. I was a loser for him.
But I also want to mention, Scott, I'll tell you this story. So this is 2022 or so. I only know this because we were still in the rental house from when we moved here and weren't in the house we're in right now. I'm sitting at my desk on like a Wednesday afternoon at like 1 p.m. My phone rings. It's in March. My phone rings. It's him. I answer, and he says, I'm sitting in your driveway. I want to go to the driving range. Get your clubs. And so
he did.
I grabbed my clubs. It was still pretty cold, but like, I mean, what, you were 91 at the time. It was warm enough to go hit golf balls, and you wanted to go hit golf balls at 91. I just love that.
Well, I don't want to go out on the golf course without at least hitting balls a few times, because I at least want to have a chance.
Yes. Know. Yes. And, yes. And I broke a club that day. It was so cold. I had graphite shafts on these two wedges and snapped it because it was so cold. But hey.
Have you guys played a round together?
Once. No, I think we've only ever gone to the range.
Yeah.
We've run into each other on the golf course. Yeah. Like he was in front of me, but we've never like gone out and played. I don't think.
All right. Who has odds on that one?
Oh, he does.
No, he's straight down the middle. You don't understand how straight he is. You don't understand. I know he doesn't have distance, but you don't need distance if you're hitting it dead straight every time.
I hit a good tee shot last year off the 17th tee, and I said, well, that's one of my better ones. So Joe Thompson was with me. He rode out in a cart to the ball and then went back and
shot it to measure, see how far?
And it was 198. So I'm still having it at 200.
But still, 200 at age 94.
Well, you ought to be able to hit it farther than that.
And then you just rolled it up to the green, didn't you?
Well, probably.
Wait, 17 on orange course, the par 5?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
So don't ask me what I scored. Okay. I don't remember.
Okay,
this would be the University of Illinois golf course.
Hey, 200's enough to get around that corner, so you could get home.
Yeah, I was at the corner.
Yep. See?
But you know what everybody's telling me to do?
What's that?
Move up to the women's tee.
Can't do it? You're still playing the old man tees?
I'm still the old man tees, but I should move. This year I'm going to move up. I'm going to move up as close as I can get.
This year.
At 94. This is finally going to accept to play the front tees. I love it. Oh, I love it so much. You're a treasure, sir.
Well, I don't know.
Well, but your longevity, I'm going to guess, is in part because you've stayed active.
Well,
physically.
I think everybody says that. I mean, and, you know, and I think that's possibly true. But, you know, you don't know about this life. My dad died when he was, I guess he was 29, something like that. I was in the third, I was in the second grade in Hoopston, Illinois, and they took me down to Kentucky because he had lung cancer, he had tuberculosis. And my sister died when she was one. So I'm just, I mentioned the other one earlier how lucky I am that everybody's good, because I think back to my mother and how horrible that must have been to lose your one-year-old daughter to paralysis, mm-hmm. and lose your husband, and then you had stuck with me, and we came to Illinois from Kentucky just to get away from all that down there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah. We came up here because her dad lived up here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're glad you came here. Good choice.
Well, I think it is a good, this is good, it's awful cold out there, Dave, but when you see all the things going wrong in other parts of the country, it makes you think maybe we're not so bad off here, really?
Yeah, yeah. You were born in 31 then?
Uh-huh,
okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Owensboro, Kentucky, the home of bluegrass.
Gosh.
How fitting.
That's music, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
You mentioned your four children, and all four are here in town?
Yeah. Yeah. They all moved back. I mean, Lori never left, but Travis moved back. He was in the NBA for 2 years. He was at Utah and then at New Orleans, and then he had a G League team, and he was a SID for a G League team out in Idaho for 2 years, and then he came back here, works for the university, and then my three daughters, Melinda moved back from Chicago with Joe, and then Kathy had been gone, but she's been here most of the time.
And then the thing that you two have in common is you're both grandfathers.
That's right.
As far as
he's
I know,
a
you haven't
older grandfather.
He's got great grandchildren, though.
I don't have any of those. I'm only 53. But yes. Yes.
Best you don't have any 70 year old children.
I don't. I don't.
I think Travis was born when I was 53.
Really?
54,
really?
Maybe.
I'll tell my wife that.
Start over.
Maybe it's time for another round.
Before we let you go, because we did get into some of the present. Basketball outlook here.
Well, I think we have international recruiters that are going to bring quality players. As long as we've got the money to pay them, I think we're going to do well in that area. Although I see the whole world opening up with these G League players being allowed to play. We're going to find out, how many. By next year, I'd say there'll be a dozen, probably. Mm-hmm. What's happening is that a lot of the players that are a lot of the guys that get in the draft or intend to get in the draft and don't get drafted and don't go back to college, and they go in the G League, they find, oh, boy, this is no fun playing in front of 12 people, and, mm-hmm. and you got guys coming down who's only out there to play for himself. They're not playing for the team, boys. They're playing for – everybody's playing for himself, every yep. man for himself.
Yep.
But you go back to college. Now, you do have to go to class, and that would keep Kofi from being interested in trying
sure.
to break all the rules and
sure.
come back. But, this is going to be wide open, I think, in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. You take somebody like David Mirkovich, probably not an NBA player, doesn't have the mm-hmm. athleticism, this and that. He's got a four-year career here to really – probably make a lot of money in college basketball.
As long as we can pay him more than the next guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
But you got 65 teams in these four big conferences,
mm-hmm.
Notre Dame included, and I'll say that you can't always pay them more than anybody else.
Yep.
It only takes one guy that we really like him, and we're going to take him away from Illinois. You're going to have to fight those guys, and you're going to have to pay him a lot of money to keep him.
Yep. Yep.
It's terrible. I mean, it shouldn't be that way.
Yes.
But I don't know any way. I don't see it changing very soon.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard for – how do you tell somebody like that? Well, just put your name in and see what the offers are. You can still come back. Just see what other people are going to offer you.
What's Wagler going to do? Is he going to do a pro? I think he probably will.
I mean, there's a mock draft yesterday that had him at 11. So.
Yeah, I saw that where he's 11, and we got a couple other guys in the 30s.
Yep.
So
– yep.
See, here you guys are talking about who's going to be on the roster next year.
Well, who's not going to be on the roster next year? We can do that, can't we?
That's right. That's right.
Some folks may be taking this episode in right now after Illinois-Purdue, mm-hmm. so I don't know if it's worthwhile, but I'm still curious. Of course, we'll get to do this on pregame tomorrow, so just, repeat this again, but What do you think of the outlook of Illinois and Purdue tomorrow?
Well, I know history, and history does not speak well. Illinois has won very few games. In the last 50 games that Illinois has played at West Lafayette, last 50, I can't remember the number, but it's a small number.
It's hard to do there.
Yeah.
It's just really hard.
Yep. Yeah.
But you never know.
It's in the teens.
Yeah, and without Boswell. Like,
yeah.
If Boswell was playing and you could put him on Braden Smith, then I think there's, you know, solid.
I'll say this. Nobody can guard Braden Smith when he's on. I've seen the guy do things that are just extraordinary.
Yep.
And the thing that they'll force you to do is they'll make you switch.
Yep.
Even if Boswell's on him, they'll make you switch, and he'll have somebody else on him. And if he decides to take the game over, I've seen him do it. The Iowa game still strikes me as just miraculous what he did.
Mm-hmm.
They scored behind 48-39. They scored 16 of 17 possessions, at least 1 point.
That's all coming off the top of the dome there. That's all coming from his head, the 94-year-old brain there. Mr. No. I don't have it anymore, Mr. I don't have it. He's just pulling out all of those stats right there. It's just remarkable, Lord. It's just remarkable.
I don't think so.
I know you're going to be like, it's not something. But it's just remarkable how your brain works. It's incredible.
Well, I don't think there's anything special about that part of it. I think anybody that – there are people – let me just say this. Scott Ritchie retains better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good writer, and he's the beat writer for the News Gazette, and he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm trying to write in the same newspaper with him, and I'm going to, you know, write about the Purdue Illinois game, I've got to come up with something different because he's gonna he's awful good.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I just want you to know that your brain at 94 is still amazing. Just need you to know that.
Well,
Ann, it's a privilege to be able to work with you on the radio, and we're honored that you would spend some time with us here.
Absolutely.
Oh, I always love talking.
Well,
that's all I do.
Well, if you say that, again. We might have you on again.
At least we're better off than we were at one time this recently when both of us had throat trouble. I had it, and you had it both. We had one day you couldn't even talk. Remember that?
Yep.
And I had some days where I didn't think mine was coming back. My larynx is torn, and I'm just trying to get by.
What's he going to do if he can't talk?
I don't know.
This is the moneymaker right here.
I know.
It's not the face. It's what's in here.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lauren. This has been great.
We really appreciate you, sir.
Thank you.
Lauren Tate is a Hall of Fame basketball writer and more, covering Illinois sports since 1966. And it's our pleasure to have him here on Light the Eye. One of the things I love about Lauren is he is fascinated with the present in college sports and with Illinois athletics. I really enjoyed that conversation because he doesn't mind going down memory lane, but you heard him say, well, we could move on, you know, if you'd like.
Yes.
And he's, to me, Lauren is not a guy stuck in the past.
He could speak on Chuck Borio and the Send Amici at Me 1951 team, and he can speak on the portal and NIL. And that's just amazing. You know, to span that many years across Illini athletics, to be playing poker with guys from the Final Four and national title football team in 50 and 51 to sitting here with us talking, you know, it's just crazy. It blows my – he is one of one.
Yep.
One of one.
And kind of give us some time, you know, walked all the way around the armory here to get here too, you know.
Yes.
He still moves around just fine.
The same armory where he had baseball freshman practice in 1949.
That's great.
Yep.
All right. Well, the next time we get together, it'll be after Illinois and Purdue have played and the Illini women have played against Nebraska. So we'll have a couple of key basketball games that we'll be revisiting, and won't be long before we start talking some spring sports too. So,
yep.
looking forward to that.
We're rolling.
So we'll talk to you again real soon on Light the Eye. Thanks so much to our guest, Lauren Tate. Our producer is Ella Peterson. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. Thanks so much for joining us on this edition of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. So long.